Oi, barefoot, running at speed away from him. Outraged, Ah Suk yelled and gave chase. But the boy was fast and knew the warren of the docks familiarly. Within minutes, he was gone. Ah Suk searched for the boy until well after nightfall. When finally he gave up and returned to the custom house, the customs officials only shook their heads and spread their hands. They pointed inland and spoke a volley of words. Ah Suk did not know what they were pointing at or what they were saying. He felt a sob rising in his throat. His hatband had contained all the money he owned, save for the single banknote that he'd been holding in his other hand. He was now all but destitute. Distraught, he removed his boot, placed this last banknote in the worn hollow beneath his heel, replaced his boot, and returned to the Palmerston. At least, he thought, there was one man in Sydney who could speak Cantonese. Ah Suk approached the brothel cautiously. From within he could hear the sound of a piano, the timbre unfamiliar to him. He felt that it had a squarish, comfortable sound. He was lingering on the threshold, wondering whether he should knock, when the door was wrenched open and a man appeared in the doorway. Ah Suk bowed. He attempted to explain, as courteously as he was able, that he wished to speak to a man named Carver, captain of the Palmerston. The man in the doorway responded with a string of unintelligible sounds. Ah Suk persisted, repeating Carver's name very slowly and carefully. He received the same response. Next, he tried to indicate with the flat of his hand that he wished to step around the man and venture inside so that he might speak to Carver himself. This was a mistake. The man grabbed Ah Suk's shirt collar with one enormous hand, picked him up, and threw him bodily into the street. Ah Suk fell painfully, jarring his wrist and his hip. The man pushed up his shirt sleeves and advanced down the stairs. He took one final drag of his cigar before throwing it, with a flick of his wrist, sideways into the quay. Then, grinning, he put up his fists. Ah Suk became very anxious. He put up his hands also, to indicate that he did not wish to fight, and begged for mercy. The man called something over his shoulder, perhaps an instruction, and within moments a second man, his face much thinner, his nose more hooked, had appeared at the doorway of the brothel. This second man darted around behind Ah Suk, hauled him to his feet, and pinned his hands behind his back, a pose that left his face and torso undefended. The pair exchanged words. Ah Suk struggled, but he could not wrench his wrists free. The first man, raising his forearms in front of his face, shifted his weight lightly from foot to foot. He approached and then retreated several times, stepping very lightly, and then darted forward and began to batter Ah Suk's face and stomach with his fists. The man behind him crowed something. The first grunted in return and fell back, only to advance again in the same style and release a second flurry of blows. Soon the revellers inside the brothel were roused. They spilled into the street, bringing the noise of their party with them. Francis Carver appeared in the doorway of the brothel. He had removed his jacket. He was in ruffled shirt sleeves and a blue necktie, tied with a sloppy four-in-hand knot. He placed his hands loosely upon his hips and surveyed the fight with an irritated look. Ah Suk met his eyes.
"Ngoi bongo!" he cried through a mouthful of blood. "Ngoi bongo!"
Francis Carver seemed to look right through him. He made no sign that he could understand Ah Suk at all. One of the other revellers said something, and Carver responded in English, shifting his gaze away.
"Pang yao! Oh, pang yao!"
But Carver did not look at him again. A copper-haired woman appeared next to him in the doorway, snaking beneath his arm. He caught her around the waist and pulled her body close to his own. He murmured something into her hair. She laughed, and they went back inside. Soon the second man could not support the dead weight of Ah Suk's body. He dropped him, complaining evidently of the blood that had spattered on his jacket and his cuffs. The first man began to kick Ah Suk where he lay, but evidently this was not as entertaining as his former sport, and soon the crowd lost interest and dispersed. The first man gave Ah-Suk a final kick in the ribs with the toe of his boot, and then returned inside also. When he re-entered the brothel, there was a rising wave of laughter, and then the piano struck up a new tune. Using his elbows and his knees, Ah-Suk dragged his broken body to the alley, out of sight. He lay in the shadow, feeling a sharp pain each time he drew a breath. He watched the masts of the ships move back and forth. The sun went down. After a time, he heard the lamplighter's tread upon the quay, and near him, the hiss and thump as the gas lamp was ignited. The darkness turned grey. He feared that all his ribs were broken. He could feel a sticky wetness like a sponge above his hairline. His left eye had closed. He did not know if he had strength enough to stand. Presently the rear door of the brothel opened, spilling yellow light onto the stones. Quick steps padded into the alley. Ah-Suk heard the clink of a tin bowl being set down upon the cobbles, and then felt a cool touch of a hand upon his brow. He opened his right eye. A young woman with a thinly pointed face and buck teeth was kneeling before him. Murmuring phrases he did not understand, she dipped a square of cloth in warm water and began to daub the blood from his face. He let her voice wash over him. She was wearing a starched apron in the manner of a barmaid. She must work inside, he thought. This guess was confirmed when, after a moment, there came a shouted summons from within, and, muttering, she put the cloth down and darted away. Several hours passed. The piano player ceased, and the noises from within began to dwindle. Ah-Suk slept a while, and awoke to find that all was very quiet, and the barmaid had returned. This time she was carrying a caddy under one arm, several implements rolled in cloth, and a spirit lantern. She knelt beside him, placing the lantern carefully upon the cobbles, and twisting the dial so the globe flared white. Ah-Suk turned his head as gently as he was able, and saw, with some surprise, that the caddy she was carrying bore his own family name, stamped in Chinese. He gave a start, which the woman interpreted strangely. She smiled and nodded, and placed her finger against her lips to signify a secret. She then opened the caddy, fished around amongst the tea leaves, and withdrew from the interior a small square package wrapped in paper. She smiled at him. Ah-Suk was confused. He turned his head painfully to the right so as to see the implements the woman had unrolled from her bundle, and saw a short, inelegant pipe laid out next to a needle.